Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Everybody to Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 300. 300th episode of Wrestling Omakase. We are live from the Cross Hotel in Osaka. Or I guess live to tape. It's not like people are actually listening to me talk right now. But downtown Osaka, Dotonbori, Namba, whatever you want to call it. The place where Kiryu fights people, you know. Where like the Glico Man, as you were just saying, the shadow of it is directly out my window. But so I'm joined here by Matt, first time Omakase guest, I believe long time listener. Do you go back like to the original run before?
Yeah, like okay. 2017, 2018.
Oh, wow. Okay.
See, I remember the Naito G1 win when you guys were in Japan for that.
Yeah.
I remember that. I go back that far.
Wow, that is awesome. So there you go, a very fitting 300th episode guest.
I'm honored.
Matt is Armani Shoe Exchange on the Voice Wrestling Discord, people, and Twitter, I think, if people recognize that screen name. But yeah, we just got back from Dominion, I don't know, what, like 15 minutes ago, probably? I get something like that. So yeah, the show just concluded, and we're here to talk about it. So, you know, actually doing audio in Japan this time, unlike last time when I said I would do it and then just never got around to it. But definitely going to be no five-hour episode this time, like you guys are used to. We're mostly going to talk about Dominion, that's it.
We're too hungry.
You know... I don't even know what this means. Y'all hate Okada's career. Okay, weird tweets. Yeah, we are very hungry. I found, so if Paul is listening, Paul Vogt from the Emerald Flow Show, we couldn't figure out, neither one of us could figure out which izakaya we went to last time. I'm reasonably sure I found it, and the reason why I had such a hard time finding it is because it's not on Google Maps, as far as I can tell. Like, we were literally standing outside of it, and I could not pull it up on Google Maps. I'm like, where is this? It's just like a empty building, according to Google Maps. So I ended up like putting down a coffee house that's like directly across the street from that is on Google Maps, so I can find my way back there. But I did think, because it was like very distinctive, it was like on a corner near where the round one is over there. So obviously, I'm not going to be 100% sure until we go in there and try to eat there. But it looks exactly the same. It has that ground floor, and then like two flights of stairs up. So it was really good. So hopefully this is the same place, we'll say. But yeah, that's what we'll be doing after the show. First of all, before we get into any wrestling, this is your first time in Japan. I already know how you're liking it, but why don't you tell the listeners how much you're liking it?
I had the highest of expectations thanks to all of, you know, the stories of everybody in the community, from family and friends that have visited. And somehow those expectations have been exceeded as far as you can imagine. It's been nothing but excellent, you know, since the point I touched down. I've been here for 4 days, and best trip of my life already.
We both landed the same day. So we landed Thursday the 11th. It's now the 14th as we're recording this. So yeah, we've been here a few days now. But yeah, we had the same itinerary. We started in Yokohama, for two nights, and now we've been in Osaka. You're leaving Osaka one night later than me. You're leaving this coming Thursday, the 18th. I'm going to Tokyo on the 17th. But you haven't even been in Tokyo yet, which is the biggest part. Yeah,
I feel like most people, that's the first place they always go to. So I'm kind of interested that it's kind of like the end of my trip. Something to look forward to.
My very first trip in 2016, I barely left Tokyo, to be honest. Like, it was a shorter trip than I think even your, because I'm staying a couple days later than you, I think, this time. Right, you're going back the 26th.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. I'm going back the 28th. But the 2016 trip, I think it was like a week and a half or something. So it was like less than this. And besides, I was originally like not going to leave Tokyo at all. And I was like, wait a second. I might never come back here. Fucking funny, given this is now my seventh time. I might never come back here. I'd feel so stupid if I don't ride the Shinkansen at least once. So I took the Shinkansen all the way to Kyoto. And just did like a day trip.
Yeah.
And just like walked around Kyoto. I'm very glad I did that too, because Kyoto now is like a fucking nightmare.
That's what I've got set for tomorrow. So we'll see. I've heard it can be a little challenging.
There's this amazing, I think it was like a year ago. There's this amazing story that was like about how crazy the Kyoto travel has gotten. And one of the funniest anecdotes to me was these two, I think, young women from, I think, America, some Western country, were walking around with this crazy itinerary, and, you know, they were talking to, like, a literal, like, travel expert in Kyoto, and she was like, you cannot do all this in one day. And one of them goes, well, ChatGPT says we can do it.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, well, man, I think the travel expert probably knows more than the chatbot that's supposed to agree with you about everything you say. So that was just such a funny anecdote to me. But yeah, like, pick, like, I don't know if you already have your itinerary, but like, pick a couple things is what my advice, especially now, and like, don't really worry about trying to get to, because there's 7,000 sites in Kyoto. Obviously, do you have any?
I really don't. I've kind of researched a little bit. It's probably going to be kind of freestyling a little bit. Probably see maybe what is.
There's that one the one that used to be the Emperor's residence, not the Emperor's residence, the Shogun's residence, when he would come to Kyoto to visit from Tokyo during like the Shogunate period. That one is really, really good, because that one, like, it's one of the only ones that's like completely obviously it's the original structure, since Kyoto, unlike a lot of this country, never got bombed by fucking America. But it's like the interiors are actually really well maintained, because a lot of them, like, if you go to like besides like Osaka Castle, you know, you go in there and it's like
it's a museum
inside. Yeah, and this one, it's really, really, it's like much more like the, I don't know if you've ever been to France, like the Palace of Versailles. Oh, no, you told me this is your first international trip.
It is.
Yeah, it's much more like the Palace of Versailles, where like they're trying to like actually recreate.
And, it's
like,
intact and trying to make it as authentic as possible.
Like, it's not just a museum. Like, the Osaka Castle you go into, it's like, you went to it already?
Have not, but what I've heard. It's just pretty much a museum inside.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth, I went to it twice, actually. It's worth going to, but like, it's, if you're expecting it to like look like a castle inside, you're going to be disappointed, because it's just a big museum.
But yeah, if you can find anything that's authentic, or, you know, the original building, like you said, a lot of them aren't. I mean, that's definitely worth going to. So that'll be high on my list.
I can't remember the name of it. Do you remember the name, Nicole? The Kyoto Palace that used to be the Shogunate Palace?
No, I don't.
Okay,
know.
I don't remember the name. If you look it up,
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
But you do have to take off the shoes.
Fair enough.
You should take off your shoe. I don't know that Mike's picking her up, but yeah, she didn't remember you had to take off the shoes. But yeah, Kyoto, you know, it's just very, very, like I said, very crowded. The bamboo forest is fucking amazing. That, like, it's a little further out, or I think it's Arashi is what it's called. That is really, really good. And then there's the Inari, like, mountain shrine.
That's like the steps going up to the tour. That's one that I've seen a lot of.
Yeah, that was incredibly crowded in 2016, so I don't even want to think what it's like in 2026.
I've been told the best time is if you can get there, like, right away early in the morning, which I don't know if I'm going to be getting there right away in the morning tomorrow, so maybe one of the other days if I want to go back to that. But that's definitely one that I've heard is kind of a must-do also.
Yeah. But it's cool.
I think you could, like you said, just wander around Kyoto and you're going to find hundreds of thousands of places worth going to. So
yeah, I like there's like Gion district that's supposed to be really nice. Just, you know, make sure they have a lot of streets you can't go down anymore because of people chasing the geisha. But like, it's what you can walk around is still really nice. So, but yeah, that's your Kyoto travel guide, I guess, live on the air.
Perfect.
But yeah, we're going to Kobe tomorrow, so that'll be
excellent.
Cool.
I might go there later this week.
Yeah, gonna do. There's like this mall there I really like, San Plaza, I think it's called, and there's obviously the Harborland area and all that is cool, but I've been there multiple times. Nara we're doing Tuesday, which somehow I've never done.
Oh.
Which, like, you'd think seven times by now I would have done Gnar, but I've never done the deer, never done any of it, so I'm going to go do that on Tuesday. And I'm glad, because originally it said rain, and now it doesn't look like it's going to rain tomorrow or Tuesday, so that's good.
Yeah, one thing I've learned about, you know, this is, I guess, the rainy season here, is it doesn't rain all day. It's like, it's almost like, I've compared it to people saying it's like Florida in the summer, where they get like they'll get a thunderstorm every day, like, you know, for an hour, and then it's beautiful before and after, and that's the way it's been here so far.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we got unlucky last year, where like late March, early April is not supposed to be the rainy season. Mm-hmm. It rained like every fucking day. So now that it feels like the rain is following us around. Because when we're in Tokyo, it's supposed to rain like every fucking day. But well, I guess we'll see how it goes.
I mean, if there's a place where you can find things to do when it's raining, it's
Tokyo,
Japan.
I was going to say, Tokyo especially, there's shit tons of indoor stuff to do. But it's like walking in between them, you know?
Yep.
But anyway. But yeah, I mean, we had a lot of fun last night. That was that was really cool. We had another guy with us, Ali, who we seem to have lost coming out of Dominion. I mean, he might have just collapsed, honestly. I mean, you guys told us. I mean, you were just telling me you guys are out even later than I was, because I think we split up at like, I went back to the hotel like 12:30 or 1, and you were saying you guys were out until like 3.
Yeah, we were. It was the typical just one more drink, and then it turned into another and another. We ended up in an izakaya that's a big New Japan fan. There was merchandise everywhere. I think it's called Stamina Bar, Izakaya Stamina or something. But we're checking out if you're in Osaka. That was cool. We went to 2.99 earlier in the night. So like tons of great wrestling stuff here.
Yeah, we were we did the karaoke, which was fun, and then we ended up like you said, we did Sex Machine for dinner, which was awesome.
Highly recommended.
I actually reserved it this time because the last time I was here in December, like, we couldn't get in, and it took us like 2 hours for to come back and actually get a table. This time I didn't feel like we needed to because it wasn't that busy.
Yeah,
it surprised me because it was a Saturday night and everything else was fucking busy.
It was mostly full, but not, you know, crazy.
But maybe because we reserved it for 9, and that's like their last reservation, and I think last time we tried to go earlier, so that might have been why. But yeah, we did Sex Machine. It was like a yakiniku place, really, really good. And then we did Bar Count 2.99, and we did this little anime bar, New.
That was fun.
New is fucking awesome. But yeah, I mean, the...
really nice bartenders.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool. I mean, they were trying to get me to do a review, and I'm like, I already gave you a review four months ago the last time I was here, because I've been here like 3 times now. But yeah, it's that's a really cool bar if you're into like anime or anything like that, because they basically like just sit there and interrogate you about like all your anime and like video game and you know, any other random preferences and stuff. You guys were talking about soccer and stuff, too, because I guess one of them was a big soccer head, and obviously the World Cup. One of them, like, played baseball, he was telling me. Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, asking about, like, what positions he played. And he was telling... didn't really speak English, but it's cool just through, you know, Google Translate, you can kind of converse back and forth. Well, you helped a lot with that, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my third grade level Japanese, I did the best I could, and then after that, the Google Translate took over.
But I'm not even preschool, so...
It was good, though. I mean, we could understand each other for a while, and then at some point, you'd have to pull out the Google Translate, but, you know, like, just something's not getting through. But yeah, that was cool. The place we found in Yokohama, that was fucking awesome.
Yes.
I love that place. That one I'd seen on Google Maps, and I had just, had kind of put it like a pin in it to try to go to it. And it was basically like a snacku, but like a very, very karaoke-focused snacku. I think karaoke was even like in the name. So, you know, we got there. There was already like 2 full tables of Japanese people there already. And, you know, the mama, you know, the person who runs it, was like, are you guys okay with Japanese? I was like, yeah, you know, I know a little bit. And she's trying to... the thing they freak out about the most, I figured this out, because you go to any bar like that, they want to make sure you understand, like, how the system works.
Right.
Because I think they get foreigners sometimes who don't speak any Japanese, and they try to explain to them, okay, you have to pay by the hour here, or you have to pay a table charge, and then drinks... Like,
they'll say, oh, wait, I only had 3 drinks. Why? It's the whole deal together.
You get the karaoke and the drinks and everything, it's kind of, like, included.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think that's why they get very leery of foreigners at first, and you have to make it clear that, like, I understand what you're saying, I understand it's pay by the hour. But yeah, the ones that are pay by the hour and you get unlimited drinks are really fucking great, and that's what that one was.
Oh, yeah.
They just keep refilling your drink. And yeah, it was a very. They were already the 2 groups that were there already were very drunk already.
They were.
So it was a very like fun atmosphere, and we were, you know, just doing lots of karaoke. And they, I always like impress the Japanese people by being able to actually sing in Japanese. So that was fun. I was my singing in Japanese was way better than that one guy singing in English.
Yes. God bless him.
He was really nice and like, yeah, but like
I was like, okay, when I have to mumble through a line or two, I felt better after he mumbled basically through all of Rihanna's Umbrella. Like, basically all he knew was, like, Umbrella, Ella, Ella. And, like, the entire rest of the song, he was, like, not saying anything. But, yeah, he was very nice. It was very cool.
A true pro.
A true pro, yeah, just getting through the song. But, yeah, okay, I said I wanted to do this fast, and I wasted 15 minutes. But Japan's awesome. What do you want me to tell you?
We could talk all night.
I really could talk all night about how great Japan was. This was my second show. I believe this was your first show of the trip, right?
First, yep.
Yeah, the only other show I went to was Tokyo Joshi. I'm not going to give a full review of that. I'll just mention it was a lot of fun. I was at Yokohama Radiant Hall yesterday on the 13th before we left Yokohama for Osaka. You know, just kind of standard house show stuff. But, you know, we had front row at the show, and it was a completely sold-out building, too. Like, they had a little sign at the front that was, like, you know, basically no tickets. Like, we don't have any tickets to sell you. And, you know, it was the crowd was really into everything. We got hit by Himawari's hair braid, which was really fun. Because her team had just lost. I forget who the fuck she was even teamed with now, but whoever was got pinned in the ring. And she's whipping somebody on the outside, and literally, like, right in front of us. And she, like, moves the hair whip back. People don't know what Himawari looks like. She has these two really, really long hair braids that she literally whips people with. And she takes one of the hair braids and, I guess, like, really pulls back on it to try to whip forward. And she whips it back so fast and so hard. She got me and Nicole right across our knees. And Nicole and I were just like, yeah, that shit does hurt. We can confirm. Because it did not tickle. And I don't even know if she knew she did it. It was the funniest part. Like, Izumi, I was comparing it to you the other day. When Izumi stepped on my foot last time, she fucking knew she did it. Because she looked right at me. And it just kept going. I just kept, like, fucking stomping off, basically, because she was, you know, really mad at the time. And, you know, something was happening in the ring that she was mad. I think hate was cheating, actually. I think that's what was happening that she was angry about.
Imagine that,
I know. But, yeah, she knew she did it. I don't know if Himawari actually knew she did it. She never looked at us or anything. And plus, like,
she was landed in, brother.
Yeah, but, like, I guess if you step on someone's foot, you'll know that. But it's not like the hair can tell you that, you know, you hit someone with it, so... It was kind of interesting.
Buyer beware, front row.
no, I love it.
Occupational hazards.
Yeah. But yeah, I had a really good time at that show. And then obviously this was our second show of the trip. My next show is not until Thursday, which is the All Japan Korakuen. Mm. And then I have King Gacha Friday and then the doubleheader Saturday, Stardom the Conversion and the Ice Ribbon 20th Anniversary. You don't have anything till Stardom, right, I assume?
Right, nothing. Yeah, yeah, nothing. Yeah. I would have gone to All Japan if I was in Tokyo while it was going on, but I'm going to miss that one, unfortunately. But that's a good lineup of shows for a time of year that doesn't... Yeah, you know, this isn't Wrestle Kingdom Week where you got stuff at Korakuen every day, but you put together a good schedule.
Yeah, Sunday too. So, yeah, I have a bunch of days off, then like 4 days in a row, because Sunday I'm going to the Unagi Saiga Korakuen with Hikari Noah's return, and then I have a bunch of days off again before... Because we're leaving Tokyo again to go to... the Gelo Onsen, Shizuoka, and then go back to Tokyo. But I'll probably go to the other King Gacha show the next Friday. I haven't bought that one yet. And then Saturday, I just bought Tokyo Joshi at KFC Hall. I bought that at the other Tokyo Joshi show, which is cool when you actually go up and you can, like, pick your seat.
The ticket. That's instead of just, oh, I want an S seat and hope I get a good one.
Like, they show you the little ticket map and you can, like, actually, they'll have them, like, a little squares, all the seats, and the colored ones are the ones they have with them, you know, to sell you. So I picked one that was pretty dead center. And then Sunday I have the DDT Korakuen before we go back, so later that night, because that Korakuen's like 11:30. But yeah, pretty, like you said, pretty cool lineup. I'm pretty excited about it. But yeah, this show, as listeners heard, I wasn't super into the lineup when it came out. And I saw, like, a lot of people, there were a lot of people basically... you know, saying this lineup sucked. I thought that was a little too far, but it wasn't, like, the most thrilling lineup. I got weirdly subtweeted by some guy, like, who I don't know, they were just jealous of me going, or in general, they're like, oh, imagine going all the way to Japan for this shitty lineup. And I know he was subtweeting me, because I just tweeted about it, like, maybe 2 seconds before that. And it's like, I don't really get it, buddy, because it's like, this show could have been, like, the worst show that's ever happened. It could have been as bad as last year's Dominion, and I still would have been having an amazing time in Japan. So, you know, don't worry about it. But, on the other hand, though, this show actually ended up over-delivering, which...
Yes.
I wouldn't say it was, like, a great show. I don't know if I would say, like...
I'd say, like, short of a show of the year contender, but very, you know, I think pretty much everything hit at or above expectations for me.
Yeah, you're a little higher on me. I'd say, like, a solid B, probably. Yeah. Like, yeah, like, not quite, like, a Show of the Year contender, I'd say, like, it's an S show.
Yeah.
And it was, like, an A show. And this
I'd say, like, B plus, A minus is kind of where I'm at.
That's probably
Like a B plus. B plus.
But yeah, definitely.
Which, compared to last year's Dominion.
Oh, yeah. Which we had the crash out about on there. So, but yeah.
Deservedly so.
This show was a lot better than that show. It also drew better. So a 6,890 person crowd. So up about, I just had this
open. It was like 6,500 last year?
No, 6,525. So yeah, up a little, not quite 400, but definitely, you know, given that, you know, last year had the Goto thing working for them, and this year it was two relatively untested guys on top. Definitely a success to be up at all. And it looked like a big crowd when we were there.
It did. I guessed about 7,000 was kind of my mind is what I was guessing. Most of the sections were pretty full.
Yeah, I mean, there was, like, those tarped-off sections, like, to the left and right of the stage. But other than that, yeah, most of the sections, I mean, the entire floor was full. I mean, the floor was completely full. Those, like, elevated sections off the floor, which is what I sat in last time I was there in 2019, they were all full. And then when you looked at the upper levels, which I think is where you were, they were not quite full, but there were plenty of people in them.
There weren't any, like, big sections of empty seats anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, you could see, like, a little smattering of empty seats, but there was no, like, oh, man, that section's almost empty. So it was pretty full all the way around the arena.
What did you... So I guess talk a little about the venue, first of all, because this was your first time there. Now, this was Nicole's first time there, too, because she had been with me in Japan 2019 but didn't go to the show. And I remember her saying as soon as we walked in that she just thought this was a really beautiful venue. Didn't you? I think she said, because she's here, she can confirm for me, I guess. You said you liked it better than the Tokyo Dome, right? Oh, she's sleeping. She might actually be sleeping.
We put her to sleep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said did you say you liked it better than the Tokyo Dome?
Oh, yeah, I did.
I did.
I knew you were talking to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, you said you just thought it looked cooler, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, like... It has, like, a retro aesthetic to me, almost, where, like, you know, it has that really cool roof, and then, I don't know what that is, that windowed part? I almost don't know how to describe it, but it looks really, really cool when you're in there. These are all parts of the building you don't really see on TV, right?
Right.
And, obviously, like, just the way the seating is set up, too, with, like, the stands all around, around the bowl, is really cool. Nicole was asking me, like, what else they use it for. I honestly have no idea.
I think it's a big concert venue.
It's a concert venue.
I feel like there's like they have pretty big concerts there.
But I don't think a sports team plays there or anything.
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly concerts.
Yeah, it's for Osaka location-wise, I mean, it's called Osaka Jo Hall, which is Osaka Castle Hall, because it's literally right next to Osaka Castle. So, like, you in the same park area. But yeah, it's just a really, really cool venue. You know, definitely a highly recommended one to make it out for, because it's definitely, like, I put it up there with Sumo Hall as one of my favorite venues. But obviously you get way less chances to go here than Sumo Hall.
Right.
Because you just have New Japan that runs it, you know, only once a year. But definitely worth, the venue alone is worth it. This time I had royal seats, so I had fourth row. It was, like, dead center with the ring, too, which was, it was just a great fucking view. Almost the exact same seating I had as New Year's Dash, where I think it might have even been fourth row, but it was, like, dead center with the ring, and, like, one of the aisles is right next to us, so it was just very, very, very cool seats. You were, like, second floor, right?
I was second floor, but front row of the second floor, so it was very good. I was,
Which just, side?
The side you were on. I actually saw you, I saw you walk out, I tried to get your attention, you didn't see me, but I was just above, like, kind of like the entrance.
Typical
you,
me.
You go, like, if you're going into the bathroom or whatever, in or out, I was basically just above that, and you know, the second level comes down pretty far, so I was not very high up, more so than, like, the people in the bleachers on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it was great seats.
Yeah, definitely a really, really cool venue. It sounds like you had a great seat, so let's get into the match results here. The first match, the opener, was the NJPW World TV title. Konosuke Takeshita defeats Sanada in 8:24 at the Raging Fire to make his fourth defense. First of all, the entrance. Like, that was fucking, that fucking entrance was something else. I mean, he had been gone since Wrestle Kingdom. So, you know, or maybe New Year's Dash, I can't remember. I think New Year's Dash. I think he worked Dash and then disappeared. And a lot of people thought, like, is he retiring? Is he jumping to Noah to be with Naito? Like, what is going on here? So I kind of get it, like, doing, like, such a big over-the-top entrance for him. The crowd there loved it.
Yes.
I mean, so the Cold Skull theme hits. All these different versions of his different outfits in the Cold Skull era come out. you know, holding different belts. He's got I popped the IWGP US title. That was my favorite one, probably. Yeah. And then it goes to his Just Five Guys theme. He comes out with the fucking old world title. Now, it's so funny, that's now the old title. And then it goes to his current theme. He comes out in the suit that he had worn when he did his, you know, his last few, like, run-ins and stuff. He takes off that weird mask, and then this giant puff of smoke comes up, and when the smoke comes down, he's in this red outfit with, like, red hair. The guy next to me went fucking crazy.
Oh, my whole section lost their minds for it.
But, yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely cool. Nicole thought he looked like Ronald McDonald. That was her comment about Sinatra's look. But,
the guys next to me absolutely loved just all the diff, like, they got, like, progressively, like, laughing more and, like, yeah, every time one of the new Sonatas came out. So that whole thing. But then, yeah, when the whole smoke with him changing, I don't know how he did it. It was pretty cool.
I would assume he had one of those, like rip-away suits, probably.
Probably.
And he just, like, ripped it off during the smoke thing. Now, here's what I'm wondering. Is this, like, the start of the Cyber Agent TVS IE budget, like, kicking in? Like, because the entrance looked really cool in general. Like, it had those, like, those three squares.
Yeah, those, like, kind of cubes with the lighting. Yeah,
cubes and the lighting and everything. It looked a little more... It sort of reminded me of, like, Noah when they would spend more money on their entrance than they even do now. So it makes me wonder if that's kicking... I mean, there were rumblings that they thought they were going to get more funding off of this. So maybe that's already... I mean, we got, obviously, the main event. We had a new theme song for Yoda Tsuji that, you know, they commissioned an actual, like, artist who's, like, sold out the Nippon Budokan before, apparently. So, you know, and they have, like, lots of fire and stuff. So, yeah, it feels like the production, you know, the big show production did go up a notch from especially recent Bushiroad times. There were times that Bushiroad would spend more money.
Yeah.
But, like, recent times, I feel like this is definitely a higher production level.
This felt like a pre-pandemic, you know, big show. I mean, it really had the big show feel to it.
The match itself, I thought it was good. I mean, yep. Sonata definitely looked more active than he's been in a while. He did still cheat, you know, because it was funny, because he did give him a clean break early, and they, like, shook hands without incident when they did that. But then later on, he got the cold spray. He, like, sprayed it into Takeshita's eyes, and then he hit him with the guitar, but Takeshita was able to kick out. But yeah, I thought they packed a lot into 8.5 minutes. I thought Sonata looked good. I mean, I'm not a Sonata hater. I know some people really fucking hate the guy.
I'm not either. I like Sonata.
I've always liked him, and also, you know, I think he, at times, even as the House of Torture Sonata, I feel like he worked a little harder than people gave him credit for, especially last year's G1. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought he was trying a little harder than people gave him credit for. So we'll see what he can do in this year's, because they've already announced him as being in this year's. But yeah, I thought this was good. Like, a 3.5-star match. Good opener.
Right there with you.
Match 2, no DQ, Jake Lee defeated El Fantasmo in 9:40 with the front neck lock. I feel like it's not even... I didn't even see anyone talking about the fact that ELP wasn't in the G1 field.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, well, surprised me.
Yeah.
Hopefully he doesn't get through in the qualifier. I guess we'll see. I missed, like, the first 5 minutes. I went to go pee. Not for the only time in the show, but, you know, when you're drinking, it happens, I guess. But yeah, I mean, when I got back, the crowd around me was basically treating this as a comedy match.
That was my exact takeaway. Yeah, yeah. This is basically a comedy match.
Unintentional comedy. I don't know. Like, has anyone ever tried to explain to ELP that flying spots, when you have to take these long pauses, because he always does this one flying spot. This time it was a spinning DET, but he'll do all sorts of spots, like cross bodies and stuff. If you have to, like, take a long pause when you leap up on the second turnbuckle to readjust yourself and, like, feel like you're going to be able to do it and then jump off, that doesn't look cool. That looks stupid. It's like, you're making me wait to see you actually complete the move. It's like, you're just making me think about, like, how dumb this is, basically. Like, it doesn't look smooth. It looks dumb. So, yeah, ELP, take that out of your... The leap up the second rope and then leap off, it doesn't look good. Stop doing it. But, yeah, Jake hit him with his shoe and, I guess, choked him out for the win. What I saw, I thought was pretty boring and stupid, but I missed half the match. So I'm not going to rate it.
Pretty much. I mean, if I was watching at home, I would have hand waved it. In the building, it was kind of fun, but you know, it's probably the lowest I would be on any of the matches of the show.
This match fucking ruled. Taichi and Yuya Uemura defeat Ryoya Oiwa and Zack Sabre Jr. Mm-hmm. Taichi pinned Oiwa in 13:15. It started simple, just built from there, and the crowd was going completely fucking crazy for that last Taichi Oiwa sequence.
Yeah.
They got more out of Taichi trying to escape a side headlock than most wrestlers get out of, like tons and tons of high spots. I mean, this crowd was, like, living and dying with Taichi trying to get out of this headlock. And he, like, kept trying to, like, sort of turn it into a backdrop suplex, but he couldn't. He kept, like, not being able to quite do it. And when Taichi finally did get out and they did that whole last sequence and he sat down for the pin, the whole area, like, where I was sitting just exploded for that. Like,
same.
Me and the Japanese guy sitting next to me both, like threw our hands up. It was, like, very, very, like, you know, everybody was celebratory. I mean, Taichi was the most over guy on the show to this point. I mean, he was
easy.
Super, super, super over. Yuya was over. Pretty much everybody in this match.
Yep.
I mean, there were, like, Zach calls. There were Oriole calls. I mean, this was... But Taichi was the favorite. I mean, everybody loved him. Again, it's not my bias as a Taichi stand talking.
No, like, he was... I mean, of the entire show, he was one of the most over people easily.
I mean, he was just... he was fucking great here. The match was fucking great. Yeah. 4.25 stars from this.
That's exactly what I said. It's almost, like... I don't want to say the perfect, like, undercard tag, but that's exactly what you want out of an undercard tag on a big show. And all four guys have, like, good history and relationships with each other. I don't remember even what the G1 blocks were, but my thought coming out of that was, man, I hope all four of these guys are in the same G1 block, because they all have really good chemistry together.
Well, I have bad news, because Yuya and Zach are both in B. Taichi and Oriwa are not in yet. They're probably going to be in the qualifiers. I don't like Taichi's chances of getting through, but...
Yeah. But those were the big matchups during this tag match, where those two pairs going against each other, and it was great. Loved it.
Match 4 was El Desperado beating Mystico in 9:33 with the numero dos. It somehow didn't even occur to me until the music started that I was going to actually hear Mystico's theme, and not the New Japan overdub. But I was like, oh yeah, it's an actual theme. They don't have to overdub in the building too. But yeah, that was kind of cool. I thought this match was really good. I know some people are, like, really down on Desperado now, like, especially, like, your Super J-Cast Discord types and people, but I still enjoy him. I guess I'm in the minority among a lot of the Western fans, and, you know, I thought this match was really good. You know, the crowd was a lot more into Mystico than I expected.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you get these New Japan, Japanese crowds that are, besides Fantastica Mania, and they just kind of seem like they're not that into Mystico. And at least my section, everyone was treating Mystico like a big deal.
There were a lot of Mystico calls in my section.
Yeah. So, but the sudden, like, the flash submission finish, basically, the numero dos, I thought was a really cool finish. Yeah, I was like 3.75 on this, so I thought was really good.
I was right around there. 3.5, 3.75, really breezy. My takeaway that I immediately thought was, I like Lucha Sicko Despy better than, like, Shindy Sicko Despy.
Yeah. Mystico still getting his theme played for him at the end. That was really funny. I'm like, that man is a worker.
In typical Mystico fashion, how many poses and thank yous did he do all around? And plenty of the people in my section were kind of starting to laugh at it. Like, they kind of got it as it was going. Like, oh, this guy's not going to leave. Yeah. It's like each pose got progressively more funny to them as he was leaving. But it was great. Great to get the... I don't think I've ever seen Mystico live, so... I think that was my first time seeing him live, so that was cool.
I must have seen him live, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, I feel like I should have, but I can't think of any, so I don't think
I've seen him in America. Have I seen him in Japan? I don't know if I have, actually. It could be for me, too, actually. I really can't think of it. Like, did I see... I don't think I've been to any AEW shows as long. Because, yeah, especially the time when I was going to a lot more AEW shows, I don't think he was there yet, so... of course, Mystico, I assume this is to set up a match in Mexico, I would assume. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. I don't know why I just said I assumed twice. I'm very tired, everybody. The G1 Climax announcements.
There we go.
We had A Block and B Block. I'll just go through the announcements. A Block is Takeshita, Tsuji, Sanada, Shingo, Jake, Bolton, and Goto. So those are 7 we know for A Block. B Block, Callum, Zach, Shota Umino, Yuya Uemura, Ren Narita, Drilla Maloney, and Gabe Kidd, who did get a big reaction. I gotta give him that. The crowd went crazy when they announced that.
He felt like the biggest surprise. I think that was you know, my section was like they were not expecting him, so they kind of really were surprised by it.
I mean, he hasn't even returned to AEW yet, has he?
I am not sure.
Okay, yeah, you're probably not the one to ask.
I'm not the one.
neither one of us. Okay, I'm just going to check Cage Match real quick and see if he's returned. I don't think he has, though, because I feel like I would have heard about it.
While you are looking that up, I just thought the announcements, you know, you see the video every year when they announce the G1 participants, but, like, the crowd reacting to every... I mean, I think everybody got pretty much a good reaction around me and is, you know, you're starting to really feel the excitement for the G1 and who's in it.
Bolton got a big pop, too.
Yeah.
Because I think he's been out hurt, too.
Yep.
Yeah, Gabe's last match was in April, so no, he hasn't returned to AEW yet. So, besides these 14, So they said the winners of the tag title match get in automatically, which ended up being the fucking Holy Semen Army, unfortunately. And then there will be qualifiers on June 23rd, which is, of course, the Corgan we're going to, and July 6th for the last four spots. The only problem with that is I feel like the fact that it was Okan and Hinari that got through, I think that gives away the qualifiers to me too much. Like, I could buy them leaving out either Okan or Hinari, especially Okan. But, I mean, obviously now we know they're going to be in. I don't really buy them leaving out Oscar or Yuto Ice.
Yeah.
Maybe Oscar, but I don't think so. I think he's going to be in. So I feel like it's way too obvious it's going to be Oscar, Yuto Ice, Aaron Wolf, and Oiwa. The only one, maybe Aaron Wolf, you leave out this year. Maybe they think he's not ready or something. That's the only other thing I could say.
You could say, oh, he's still just a rookie. He hasn't, you know, he has. But he's a champ. Well, we'll
now
get to that.
Yeah, but now he's never champion. So, yeah, I don't
think it'd be tough
to
leave him out.
It'd be tough to leave him out. So, I think it kind of gives away there's not going to be any Taiji this year, which fucking sucks given he was the MVP last year. And again, one of the most over people on the entire show. But, you know, again, I shouldn't preemptively bitch about it. You never know what they'll do. But it's, to me, it kind of gives away the result of the qualifiers. So, the never open weight title, Aaron Wolf defeated Red Narita in 9:24, the angle slam. I don't know why they call it the angle slam. It's like the Olympic slam, but anyway. This is only Narita's second defense. Like, what the fuck? He's had this fucking belt since February. I did. Takeshita ran out, made the save. He saved Wolf from the triple team house beat down.
My section thought that was really funny. They were like, Takeshita. They were wondering why he was the one making the save.
Nobody understood that he joined Hontai, I guess. I totally forgot until he ran out. Because I think it happened backstage when he joined like last month. But yeah, he ran out in the Lion Mark shirt and made the save to, I guess, be like, yes, I am New Japan now.
They were confused. they were very confused.
But yeah, Wolf, you know, I thought this was like, I didn't think this was any kind of disaster. I mean, Wolf was very over. You know, he threw a really nice lariat at one point. Like, that was a highlight. I would go, like, I had 3 stars on it. I thought it was fine. It didn't bother me, you know. I mean, there were definitely parts that were really boring and, like, a lot of heat and whatever. But, like, you know, the crowd was, when you're there in person for one of these matches, which I think has always been a disconnect with the house stuff, and you know, I don't, not trying to argue with anybody who hates it. A lot of shows watching at home, I hate it nowadays too. But when you're there in person and the crowd's going crazy, and especially when the babyface actually does overcome the heels, you know, there is a certain energy to it where you're like, okay, I can get into this. It doesn't always come across on screen, but, you know, it was fine to be there for.
Yeah, it was better than I expected. I knew, you know, you're not going to catch the lightning in a bottle that you had with Wolf and Evil. I mean, because one, Evil is so much better than Narita at this kind of stuff, and two, you know, Wolf's debut, that's a one, you know, that you have the novelty of it, so you don't have those things, but I think it hit above what I was expecting, and they played it right, where, okay, you let House of Torture do their stuff, and then you clear them out, and then it was, you know, just basically a one-on-one singles match. I don't even think there was really much cheating or anything from Narita, like, once they got kicked out either. I mean, the last 4 or 5 minutes, it feels like, was pretty much just a straight-up match.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't go very long either. Yeah. I mean, it was just set under 10 minutes, so it didn't have any chance to overstay its welcome, so.
I think it was that matchup that was the best, you know, that was probably the best way they could have done it.
Yeah. Then we had the IWGP Tag Team titles. Great Okan and Hinari defeated Oscar and Yuto Ace. Hinari pinning Yuto Ace in 21:30 with the Great Bomb. They failed in their V7 here. So this was a great match. I mean, I can't say it wasn't a great match. I don't think it's not quite the level of some of the other, like, super, super great matches Nakamura's had this year. The one thing that really popped me was when Yuto Ice was fighting Hinari, he just said, like, show me your mana, bitch, right before he gave, like, a shoot headbutt. That was great. And obviously the sequence where Hinari and Ice were just, like, punching each other in the fucking face was great, and the whole section was going crazy for that. Yuto did, like, this really great job selling that he was out afterward, too, I thought. Like, just really, like, just selling that he just could not continue at that point. And he needs Oscar to, like, literally pick him up to do their double-team powerbomb thing. So that was a good job by him. Hinari and Okan used a chair and then hit this double-team powerbomb dominator claw thing, which I guess is the great bomb, that got the pin. Yeah, I thought, you know, there were parts of it earlier that dried a little bit, but the end of it was so great that I was still able to go 4 stars flat on it. But obviously, the result really disappointed me, because I don't know. I would have just put Oscar and Yuto straight in, but I get they want them to. I guess they want them to fight their way in. It'll be a bigger deal for the core. I mean, the core can kind of will go crazy.
Yeah.
And apparently Tai Chi challenged you to ice backstage. So if that's on our show,
that's a match I want to see. So yeah, I'm up for that. I'd go even higher. I think I was like 4.25, maybe not quite 4.5, but like 4.25. But I'll throw out a hot take that I really like the booking because
That is a very hot take.
Because I think it's just kind of a natural time to get the belts off of Knockout Brothers. Kind of let them go and be singles guys for the G1, and then you can, you know, when you get to Tag League, you know, maybe they get a run through Tag League, come back and win at Wrestle Kingdom or whatever. So I think it kind of can fit in that. And I think, I mean, I might be on an island with this, but Hinare and Okan, I think this is like the best use of them. I think they are at their best as tag team wrestlers, much better than singles wrestlers. I think they're good at this kind of style of heel that they are versus being just kind of a generic, you know, babyface.
The only thing that worries me, though, is that would mean that that's going to be the Wrestle Kingdom match, which I don't know. Like, I would rather see, or a New Year's Dash, whatever the fuck they do it. I would rather see somebody else take these belts off of Okan and Hinare, and then...
I'd agree.
Yeah, then have Knockout Brothers win the tag league and go that way. Maybe you could do Tai Chi Yuya. Although Yuya might have bigger things to do at Wrestle Kingdom, to be honest. You could do Zack and Wayway again, but, you know. I don't know.
I see interesting possibilities coming from this. So that's why I'm not too bad with the booking. I think it could be good for Knockout Brothers to kind of be singles guys for a little while until, you know, time to change it up.
I think I just want to have them go longer with these belts, though. But yeah. Just, you know.
There's always the risk of Laughs in Ghetto sabotaging it. So I might look like an idiot here very shortly. But I like it. So I'm okay with it.
IWGP Global Heavyweight Title 3-Way Match. Shota Umino beat Andrade El Idolo in 16:20 with a second chapter. Obviously, Drilla Maloney also in this match. Very much in this match. You can too. But, first of all, I liked that they pinned Andrade. I was worried when they did the three-way that they weren't going to pin the champion. So, good on... one of the rare times, I will say, good on Tony Khan for letting Andrade actually lose this. Because I thought they were booking around it to let him not get pinned.
Credit where it's due.
This match was so interesting to me because... So Shota Umino has not gotten booed in a long time.
No.
He got booed in this match. And, like, this crowd... So Osaka was... Like, they love the War Dogs. And they fucking loved Drilla Maloney in this match. He was one of the more over guys on the entire show, which I did not see coming.
To this point, he probably was the most over guy on the entire show. Yeah. I mean, that place was going nuts for him.
And, like, Shota would, like, pull him off of... Like, early on, he pulled Drilla off Andrade, and the crowd booed the shit out of him for that. There was another time where he, like, cut Drilla off going for a spear or something, with, like, a knee, I think.
Yeah.
Something where he, like, ran over and stopped him doing something, and the crowd booed him again. So it felt like it didn't feel like they hated Shota. It just felt like, you know, no, we love Drilla.
Yes.
And Drilla's who we're pulling for here. But, yeah, there's another point where Shota gets, like, booed really heavily for breaking up the pin when Drilla had Andrade beat with the Drilla Killer. And, you know, they had Drilla try to dive in for the save when Shota hit the second chapter on Andrade, but like he dove in I think a little too soon because it felt like I don't know how it looked from where you were sitting. Where I was sitting at ringside, we could not tell that he didn't actually break it up.
Mm-hmm.
So when the ref counts 1, 2, 3, we all thought it was a near fall, and it just totally killed whatever the reaction was going to be.
There was confusion.
Yeah, there was just total confusion. So there was no pop, there was no boo. It was just like, what's going on here? So poor Shota Umino. I mean, this man, he had never won anything in his life besides the Noibitsu Rambo 2 years in a row. Going to defend it a third time in September, probably. And he finally gets an accomplishment. He finally wins the white belt here, and it gets overshadowed by how much the crowd loves Drilla Maloney. The finish kind of got fucked up a little bit, and then obviously it just was a setup for a Gabe Kidd attack. I felt so bad for this guy. Before we get to the game stuff, though, the match itself, besides the little screw-up at the finish, which, you know, I don't think it's like, it didn't look bad or anything, it just confused the crowd.
It didn't come off that way to me, but maybe I just missed it, though. I'd be kind of interested to go back and look at it. I kind of just got the impression that Maloney was, like, too late, but maybe he wasn't. I think that's kind of how everybody around us saw it, but maybe.
Yeah. But besides that, I thought this match was the biggest over-deliver of the show.
It was great.
I mean, this was a fucking awesome match. I usually hate three-ways.
Same.
But, like, they really stayed away from the, I'm going to throw you out of the ring and you stay out there for 10 minutes with a coma and we fight and then you come back in and throw me out. They completely avoided that. they did lots of unique, like, you know, three-way spots, and they really were, like, you know, breaking each other's moves up constantly. So it was a very, very cool three-way. Yeah, I was 4.25 on this. Yep. Again, just totally avoiding the one guy out, two guys in formula. Really made it work for me.
So yeah, I was 4.25. Yeah. Also, and it almost felt like a kind of like a chaotic, like, multi-tag you would see in Dragon Gate or Stardom or something like that. It was just all action back and forth. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, I thought all three guys were great. Drilla had a great night. Shota had a great night. Andrade had a great night. I mean, just, you know, just really, really good stuff from all three guys. And they definitely, this was a really, because this obviously being third from the top, the fact that this had over-delivered so much really helped the show. The junior heavyweight title semi-main, this had Yo defeating Doki in 1757, the direct drive, to break up his, end his reign on his fifth defense and become the 100th champion, which is something. So this is where the show kind of goes down a little bit for me, these two last two matches. So Yo, both, I mean, the problem to me, first of all, is I thought both of these matches were better previously. Mm-hmm. I thought the Korakuen match these two guys had was way better than this one. Like, you know, the live crowd, I will say, loved Yo. They loved this match. So, you know, that was, I was definitely in the minority in the building and didn't love the match. I thought it was pretty good. I was like 3.25 level on it, I guess. But, like, it just never clicked with me, anything above that. I thought the early part was boring, especially. Yes. But later on, it did pick up enough to, like I said, go like 3.25. But, yeah, I just wasn't that into this one.
No, that was my takeaway, was that it almost was, like, different. I don't even know how to rate it, because the first part of the match was really bad. No, like, as popular as Yo was, not getting any reaction, I noticed it was so quiet for some of Doki's heat segments at the start. I could hear Walker Stewart and Chris Charlton about a section over from me. I could hear them, like, clear as day what they were saying. That kind of tells you what, how little heat there was from some of those early segments. I thought, like, the last, you know, once they got it going for the, like, the kind of final finishing stretch, really good stuff. And Yo is so over. I mean, if anybody thinks Yo is not over, you could not be more wrong. And the three count might have been the loudest pop of the night of anything.
Yeah.
I think it might have been the loudest pop of the night.
Yeah, the crowd was really, really happy when he won this title. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, sometimes, it's one of these things where I've always said this, sometimes the Western fans got to get over themselves. Like, you have to have a little humility with this shit and be like, you know, oh, this isn't for me, maybe. I mean, because a lot of people hate Yo way more than I do. I would call myself, like, more ambivalent towards Yo than anything. I don't really love him or anything. Like,
that's me, too.
There's a lot of juniors I like better. I like Master Wado a lot better. I like Fujita a lot better. But, like, Yo, you know, sometimes you gotta be like, you know, the fucking crowd's going crazy, and they clearly want this man to be fucking junior champion. Just give him, I'm not gonna sit here and bash them for giving the guy the belt that the crowd wants to have the belt. It's like, you can't, I don't know, so much, like, Western fan analysis with New Japan, I feel, Japanese wrestling in general, never is willing to just say, yeah, I don't like this, but I get why they did it. You know, the crowd likes a lot more than I do. The actual fucking people in Japan that are the intended audience for this promotion clearly wanted this to happen. You know, I don't know. No one ever talks like that. Sometimes it drives me fucking crazy. So, you know, sometimes you can just admit this isn't exactly what I would personally want, but the fucking live crowd loved it. And that's fine. And that's where I'm at with this, so...
I'm always a proponent of don't fight your audience. Yeah. And something that's one of Ghetto's biggest sins many times. This is not one of them. He, you know, this is whoever's booking the juniors. I mean, Yo's the hot hand right now. Everybody loves him. And, you know, I had very low expectations for this, given the way Doki's reign has gone. So, as weird as the beginning part of the match was, I'd say it still hit above my expectations. So, I enjoyed it.
So the main event, IWGP Heavyweight title, Yota Tsuji defeats Callum Newman in 24-32 at the Gene Blaster, that's a new move. Fire Blaster, I think?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Everybody in our section was kind of confused, because I don't think they were expecting that to be the finish.
It was like, a spinning backdrop or something?
Yeah.
Right? I couldn't really tell either from where I was sitting either, so I'm seeing if they have a picture of it, because I'm just curious. It looked like some kind of spinning backdrop or something to me, but maybe I just didn't quite see it correctly. Is that it right there, maybe?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
I honestly don't remember, but I remember it was like, I haven't seen that before.
Yeah, so it's a new move.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was... Tsuji had a new theme song, first of all. What was that? Mari J, I think, was the name of the artist. Mari J. Let's see. Was it Mari J or Mary... I don't know. I can't fucking find it now. I thought I just had it open on Wikipedia, but maybe I didn't. It's like an actual Japanese pop artist. People don't know. Oh, Mei J. There we go, Mei J. So yeah, she's half Iranian, half Japanese. So yeah, she's been around a while. I've heard the name before. You know, she's like, you know, around our age actually. So like, definitely been around a while. I think looks like she's been active since 2006. But I saw very divided reaction online to this theme song. I liked it. You know, I thought it was very different. It was definitely like, we're gonna get this guy. He's our big star. We're gonna give him this like mainstream pop artist doing a mainstream pop song. It's all about fire, and he had like a big fire in the entrance.
The fire, the fire was really cool. The fire was awesome.
I would bet they tweaked this song probably to give it like more, a little more like bass or something for a live audience, because it did feel like maybe a little thin for like a wrestling like live theme. But I still thought the song was cool. I don't know. I never liked his old theme. So maybe some people who really liked his old theme.
I did like his old theme. I was a little disappointed. I didn't get to see it. I mean, I think it's cool that they're using pop artists. I mean, that's if you want to kind of get that back that mainstream, you know.
That could be the new budget kicking in.
Yeah, that could be TVSIE Cyber Agent. But I didn't dislike the song. I don't know if it really necessarily fits Tsuji that well. I feel like maybe there's some other people on the... You know, I feel like maybe like Shota or Yuya or so, you know, more like a clean...
See, I don't know.
It seems more like a clean-cut babyface kind of song. Yeah. But I guess the whole fire thing kind of worked for him. But
see, yeah. I could totally see Tsuji listening to this in real life. Maybe I'm completely off base. But I feel like he's like a... probably like a pop guy in real life, but maybe I'm just guessing, obviously. But yeah, I don't know. I really like the theme song. United Empire all came out with Callum, except for Hinari. So that man might have concussed himself again or something, because like, he was not out there at all. I shouldn't laugh at that, but I was just like, Jesus, it was weird that he wasn't out there. I don't know. I just the first half of this match, especially, was not my style of match at all. Like, way too much crowd brawling for me. Like, the crowd brawling just felt like it went on forever. And it's just not my type of match. Like, you know, my type of match is much more, you know, like, can be, is usually much more mat-based and much more, like, in-ring. And it's just the crowd brawling just felt like it went on endlessly. And I loved the first match. I loved the Sakura Genesis match.
Yeah.
I was, like, 4.5 on that match. I didn't think this match was anywhere close.
No.
Callum in general, he's kind of underwhelming the last couple months. I mean, he had a great New Japan Cup, a really great New Japan Cup. I mean, just two amazing matches with Yuya and Shota at the end of that, and then awesome matches with Sakura Genesis. But I didn't love the Shingo match at Dontaku, and I didn't love this either. I mean, they're both good matches, but like, you know, a good match is like the, you know, basically the floor for a New Japan Big Show main event, really below the floor. So, you know, I just didn't think this was like, you know, there were some cool spots. I mean, there was like Tsuji, I liked that he was ready for that Oz Cutter fake out lariat thing that Newman did last time. Like, he was ready for it this time. And he did do this, like, this great knee to the face counter when Newman tried the actual Oz Cutter. So, Tsuji had some cool stuff in this match. Did you catch, by the way, when Red Shoes? So, like, at one point, Callum does the Made in Japan, which, remember, he started doing that when he was feuding with Shingo last month, and Shingo was out there with Tsuji at ringside, and Red Shoes kind of like points at him. He's like, "What do you think of that, buddy?" And Shingo's like getting all angry at ringside. That was really funny.
I missed that.
Yeah,
that's great.
So Newman did the Excalibur on Yoda off the apron, that I guess was supposed to put him through this table.
That was awkward.
Yeah, the table didn't quite cooperate. People watching at home seemed to think it was a sick spot, so it could have just been my angle. Yeah. I couldn't really see what happened.
I couldn't really see the table either. I just kind of saw him hit the vicinity of the table and kind of roll. You know,
it seemed like he bounced hard. I assume based on the way people reacted.
We'll have to look at it again.
Now, unfortunately, I'm almost positive they went home early.
Yeah,
because Callum, at one point, he takes an overhead belly-to-belly into the corner. And this, I had a great view of this, because I was like, that corner was like directly across from my seat, practically, like literally like diagonal from it. And when he went into it, I'm like, the entire section was like, whoa, because he crashed into that corner. Like, he was running in so fast, and Tsuji threw him with such force that it felt like he was totally out of control on the landing, and his shoulder hit the corner, I think, awkwardly. And you see Red Shoes go to him right away. They talk for a long time.
They kind of, you know, the match didn't stop, but it was the kind of like, yeah, we're gonna.
And I thought at first maybe things. I thought first maybe it was a like a heel thing, like he was gonna like, because Sonata did that in the earlier match. I thought that, you know, he was gonna like, you know, reveal he's playing possum, but they finally get back up after Red Shoes talked to both of them, like, oh no, this isn't playing possum, and they basically went straight to the go home sequence at that point, like the spears and everything, and then like basically, you know, Tsuji hit this new move and bend him. So yeah, very abrupt ending. I'm almost positive Callum was actually hurt, and like when he left the ring too, like you could see, like he really wasn't moving the arm that much. Hopefully it's just like a stinger or something, and he doesn't have to miss a G1, which would obviously be a big blow. But yeah, I mean, it could be bad. I guess obviously we're recording this like, and you know, an hour and a half after the Dominion ended, so we don't know anything right now. But you know, hopefully, we'll hear something, and hopefully, it's good news. But yeah, it was a good match, like a 3.5 star level match for me, but just not up to the level of Sakura Genesis main.
Yeah, I'm definitely not Sakura Genesis level. And I almost feel like I can't rate it because it felt disjointed, and then especially with the finish. But yeah, this is one where it's like. I like the spot with Newman on the entrance ramp, the leap at our section, really like that. That
he
was great, too.
He hit really hard. Yeah.
I mean, he took some big bumps, you know, from his own offense in this match. I mean, even before any of that. So, I mean, credit to Newman for, you know, trying a lot of cool stuff. Not, I feel like this is just one where some of it just didn't land. And that's not, you know, generally I've been a fan of Newman's work the last six months or so since he kind of changed up his style, but this is one that just kind of felt like they never really had like the great chemistry. Maybe if it would have just been a full match, we wouldn't be thinking about that opening segment, you know, so much because they didn't have to skip to the end. But yeah, with the way they were kind of structuring it and the way the beginning kind of went, it's like it just never hit that next gear.
Yeah. So overall, though, like I said, good show.
Yeah.
You know, very up and down. The booking was interesting, especially, like I said, the tag titles is the one I didn't really love. But, you know, it was a good show. I mean, I feel like it might have been a lot more fun in person than at home.
I could see maybe people watching on TV not enjoying it as much, but I loved it. It was. Yeah. I mean, this is my first New Japan show in Japan, so pretty tough to not have a great time.
How many shows have you been to in America, by the way?
Probably three, four, five, something like that. G1 Dallas, Windy City Riot 1 year, couple smaller shows.
Yeah, I was just wondering. Yeah. I mean, obviously the comparison is crazy.
Yeah, it's night and day. The Japanese crowds here are just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, I've always said, like, if the moment you go to a Japanese show, it ruins America for you forever.
Because, I had that same thought.
Yeah, it's like, you'll never get that back, basically. Like, you know, the lack of people making fucking jokes the entire show and all the other stupid shit we do in America. But yeah, just, obviously, you know, I always feel bad making the, like, you should go recommendation, because obviously some people just can't afford to go.
Sure.
But if you can't afford to go, you should go. That's pretty much what I always say, yeah. Too. Because, like, anyone who's a big enough Japanese wrestling fan to be listening to this podcast, you really need to experience, like, being in a Japanese crowd. And, like, whatever, if you have any other hang-ups about it, you know, the language or whatever, like, do not worry about it. Especially big cities, you're not going to have any issue. I mean, you know, Ali, who we're just with, speaks less Japanese than either one of us, and he's yes. Totally fine, so.
Like I said, I mean, really, I don't even know that much myself. I joke that, I mean, my Japanese is sumimasen and arigato gozaimasu, and that's 90% of it. But yeah, and people will, you know, be happy to help you and work your way through it, so don't be intimidated by that.
Yeah, so definitely worth coming out for. And yeah, I'm talking here like, I don't know, like, it feels like this is like a peak of the trip, and I still have 2 fucking weeks here.
Yes.
So, 2 full fucking weeks. I mean, really don't even have to feel like I'm leaving anytime soon, because, you know, like, next week is next Saturday after we talk for conversion, that will start feeling like, okay.
Yeah, we're kind of hitting to that might be kind of like the peak, and you still have more left, but yeah, that might be the peak.
Yeah, but we still got 2 weeks to go, so.
Yeah.
All right, how did I get to the hour at least? Oh yeah, pretty close. All right, I feel like when they add their add the theme song, and add the ads and everything, add the padding, we'll get to the hour. So that's fine. I don't like releasing under hour podcasts for some reason. It's very like probably just a weird fucking tick of mine, but it just feels weird to do that. Anything else we can mention before we get out of here? I don't know. Actually, I think we're good. Anything you want to plug?
No, not really.
Okay. Do you want me to link your Twitter in the description or anything, or no?
Armani, I think I'm Armani Shu. Exchange. Yeah. I think my username's Armani Shu. But
I think I follow you. So
yep.
I'm
there on Twitter and in Discords.
Oh, yeah. Tell us the joke about Suzuki Incident Survivor.
Oh, yeah. So that's my bio is Suzuki Incident Survivor. I was at that Dynamite when Minoru Suzuki fought John Moxley. and they cut his music off, and there were, you know, people in uproar about it. I forget. I remember there was one account that kind of became a meme, calling it the Suzuki incident. Yeah, yeah. So I'd say I'm a Suzuki incident survivor.
I did that song yesterday in karaoke, and it was like that brought up the story where, like, oh, I was there for the Suzuki incident. Well, that is wrestling history. It was that in Cincinnati or something?
It was.
Okay.
It was
obviously Moxie's hometown, so... Yep. Moxley, who's in that video they play forever now with that shitty tattoo. I saw a guy on Twitter the other day who actually tried to say he had one of the best IW reigns in recent history. I was like, ooh, what the fuck were you watching?
Yeah. I like to drink whatever that guy's having.
Right? That ring fucking sucked. All right, folks. So, you can follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase. Wrestling would not fit. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Just1MB. 300 episodes. This is crazy. I only talked a lot about it last week, I guess, but, like, my God, what did I do with my life? 9 years and 300 episodes. Obviously not continuously for 9 years, because we had that, like, long hiatus. God only knows what episode number I'd be up to if we didn't have that. But the other thing, too, Nicole always brings this up to me, like, I didn't even originally plan on going weekly again when I came back, and somehow...
I remember.
Somehow just ended up with a weekly podcast. But she might actually be asleep now. Because she didn't react to that at all. I'm gonna have to wake her up now because I'm fucking hungry. All right, folks. I already did everything else, but yeah, thank you for listening. 300 episodes is crazy. If you've actually been around since the start, or even if you've been around since the relaunch, you know, I really appreciate you. You know, jump in the Discord. I don't have to give you I can't give a sicko thing for this because it's a fucking hour. But you know, let me know. And yeah, we'll be back next week. So. Me and Matt, again, same two, for Stardom the Conversion, which, oh, actually, briefly talk about the Corrigan. The Corrigan, because you watched it, I didn't watch it. You
said I was nursing a hangover, so I didn't get out to Osaka Joe until fairly close to showtime, but really good show. Great artist title match, great tag title match. The big news was Momo Watanabe coming back. I think she's going to be back at the Conversion, so it was your typical Stardom, high energy, you know, Corrigan crowd was super hot into everything, and it really set up the pay-per-view well, too, on top of the good matches.
Yeah, I have to watch that. Maybe I'll try to watch it on the Shinkansen or something. Yeah, because coming back on Wednesday.
Totally worth it.
Yeah. So, because, I mean, the artist match, you said it was even better than the one last month. I love the one last month.
I think it might be the best one since that, the one that Meltzer gave 5 stars to, five-star Miyu match. So, I think it might be the best one since that.
So, it was Poi... Aya and Unimon, right?
Yep.
So that I mean, that does, I'm sure it was great. So.
I won't give away too much for you, but big performance from Aya. She really stole the show.
And was the tag title match good too?
It was good. It was. Yeah. I think maybe the crowd was a little burned out after the artist match, and then it got going. Once it got in the second half, it was good.
Yeah.
Didn't quite hit the same highs, but it still, I mean, it's a good match that you'd expect from those four.
Yeah. All right, folks. I already did all the other stuff, so I can get out of here now. But yeah, thank you for listening. And we will see you next time.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.